Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. They examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me this hour, I have students from FAMU. I have four graduate students, all in community psychology. Joining me, I welcome Khalees Tulloch,
community psychology. What's up, everybody?
Glad to have you. Camille Lewis.
Greetings.
Jalen Barnes.
Hey, how you doing, everybody?
Ari Christian.
How's it going?
And we have our undergrad, Amelia Fields.
Greetings, everyone.
Welcome to 411 Teen. I'm really glad to have you. I'm always appreciative of you coming and sharing your thoughts and your ideas and your experiences. What is the attitude about marijuana amongst your friends and peers and young folks overall?
In all honesty, while it's been classified as being a high level drug for most of our peer group, they don't view it as such. More so, use it as like a stress reliever or like a pain, something to moderate their pain that they may be dealing with. So, as far as the seriousness of it and severity, we don't look at it to be like that. Especially since it's a herb, supposedly, we think it more so has a lot of health benefits that are better than the current opioids that are being pushed.
Okay. And I want to hear from all of you on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you sit? What do you think? Do you agree with that? Disagree? Are you finding that to be the case?
I agree. And I can speak for college students and even maybe even younger, that it's accepted and it's acceptable to use. I feel like it's acceptable to use for various reasons, from going out to partying to relaxing at home after a long day, from studying to I want to cook a good meal and make sure it tastes good. You know, I just feel like overall between music, film, TVs, like it's just accepted overall.
Yeah, I agree. It's basically pop culture now. It's a part of pop culture now. It's a part of, you know, everyday life. You got people using it, like you say, recreationally for whatever personal problems they have or whatever personal feelings they have, they're using it for that. You got people putting it in food. It's just everywhere. So Camille said, it's just pop culture now. So
same thoughts. there's definitely a normalizing to it for that demographic. Specifically, the social piece that ties into it, because it might be just like girls talking about going to have a session, like not even more so about the actual act by itself, but the that social aspect of being with your friends to a communal activity that they can engage
in. Just to kind of chill, cool out. Okay. Although we have various states, what is it, about 33 states, that marijuana is, medical marijuana is accepted, we got to at least 11, in which, you know, recreational marijuana is okay. But there's a problem there. And, you know, we were just talking about this when we were sitting out in the lobby. Regardless, it is still, at the federal level, a Schedule 1, okay? Schedule 1 means that it has no medical value. Okay? They don't see that it has anything. There's nothing good about it. Then the same thing as heroin. Same schedule. How do folks justify this? Or maybe they don't even justify it. Maybe they don't think about it. But I mean, as far as the use, because, you know, even if, and well, I won't get ahead of myself. Let me ask you that question, then we'll go on.
I think with it being illegal for such a long time, I don't know if the legal status has affected the use of it. So, you know, people have always smoked weed.
That's true.
When it was illegal, when it was just recreationally illegal, even now if it's medically acceptable. So I think the attitude is people are getting less it's not as much of a stressor, the legal part of it, because they feel like it's becoming more accepted. It's getting decriminalized in some areas. So I think they're just getting more comfortable smoking. And I know, like, I've gone places and see people walk around the neighborhood and they're smoking in public. Like, I've been at red lights and looked over, you know, to the car next to me. So I do feel like because it's becoming decriminalized, people are getting more comfortable using it and being open and sharing the fact that they're using it, and they're not being so secretive about it. But I don't think the use of it has changed at all.
Okay, so you don't think that it's increased, decreased, or anything? You think it's about the same? I don't know. I'm just asking. You think it's about the same?
I don't have the statistics on it, but I would assume so.
Okay, you nodding your head. Where are you sitting on that, bro?
As far as, like, with all the societal changes and especially legal ones that have come out, I believe there's a higher prevalence of people using it. There may not be as many people reporting it because there's still this social taboo that we're kind of trying to figure out about the social perception about people smoking and who can necessarily do it. Mm-hmm. We try to refine it to, like, certain age groups and demographics and try to say it's more preferable for other people. But there's also some, like, socialization things. Like, it was funny. There was when you go out to the club, sometimes it's great what you get to hear. So it was an instance. I was walking near a sister, and she was like, "Oh, it's not ladylike to smoke, right?" But imagine that's something she had been taught, right? Okay. So there's this societal perception that what women necessarily shouldn't be able to do this. So there may not be them going about actively saying, "Oh yeah, we're engaging in this, we're participating in it." Mm-hmm. But like Camille said, there's always been a strong base of people that have been wanting to use it and have been engaging in it. It's just more so bringing it to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kind of what Ari was saying about bringing it to the forefront. So it's always been a thing, as we know, but in terms of, like, now us using medical and the legal aspect as a scapegoat, so, like, now it's kind of bringing it to fruition, like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is okay now, it's socially acceptable, I don't have to hide behind my doors. So I don't think it may be that they're increasing usage. It may be the same, but now we're seeing it more because, again, like everyone was saying, it's being normalized more, and now we have all these different excuses for why we need to use this publicly or outside of our homes and things of that.
Right. And I agree with Khalees. I think because of its normalization and how prevalent it is now, it is the fact that it is getting legalized recreationally and medicinally. That's a scapegoat. You got more people. Like I said, I agree with everyone else as far as, like, the numbers, but I think there's more people using than more people researching the facts or fact checking. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you got people using, and you got people not knowing what they're using or what it's for or anything for economically or to the medicinal purposes. So I agree with everyone else on that standpoint as well.
Comment.
Oh, yes, ma'am. He made a very great point. A lot of people are misinformed about what they're using, how to use it, the prevalence in which they're using it, and the effects that it takes on your bodies and things like that. As far as, like, the increase in usage, I can say maybe a slight increase, but only because, like, the things we mentioned, it's become more normal, and so people who wouldn't have tried it before feel more comfortable to try it. But again, even the World Health Organization reports, like, just because you try it one time doesn't mean that you're normal and active user. So I don't think those two correlate, but I do think there's a tiny increase, but it's been here for years.
I guess my question is, where, and I don't mean this literally, but where do people get it? And by that I mean, you know, it's been mixed with all kinds of, and that would be a big reservation, because I have seen the other side when people have had it mixed and they're really tripping out to the point that they're in the hospital. Right. Okay, so that doesn't concern people, or do you have somebody that you know that you can rely on, because it seems to be, you know, it's mixed with so many things. Or is that just me being old school?
Like, there's a perception of it as far as, like, comfortability when choosing where to buy and, like, who you buy from. And so understanding that even though we may not ask those questions when we're in the midst of engaging in that exchange, mm-hmm. As far as getting the marijuana. Like, yo, where is this coming from? Who grew it? X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. But as far as understanding the cultural context and of a person, as far as we sometimes, in all honesty, operate on blind faith and just using that communal aspect, saying, okay, I wouldn't believe this person would do me wrong, so I'm going to necessarily trust them to be able to make this purchase. In a similar way, how we choose businesses.
But what about when you're in a group and at a party or mm-hmm. something like that? Okay, whereas, yeah, with your on your one-to-one, but like when you're hanging out, mm-hmm. does that enter into your mindset? Is that a concern? Is that a worry at all?
Honestly, I don't think so, because of what Ari was just saying in terms of the communal aspect. It's like, if you're at the party, you're under the assumption that you're using as well, and you wouldn't use something that would purposely harm you. So it's the kind of the notion that you wouldn't put out the same to hurt anybody else. So they're not concerned. And that's another thing. They're not really concerned about where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. They're just concerned about the effects that it has. Mm-hmm. And they know that they feel good after that. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of plays into the, I would say, blind faith, like Ari was saying.
Have you all ever seen anybody who's had a negative reaction because it's been mixed?
So I have. Okay. I have. And I'm going to disagree to 2 points. So the point you made about, you know, people just have this blind faith going in. I know a term that I heard a lot when I was younger is don't smoke it if you don't see somebody roll it. Because mm-hmm. you never know what somebody can put into anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So yeah. people lace joints with cocaine. They lace joints. Even if the marijuana doesn't have chemicals in it, people mm-hmm. will still add certain things into a joint or into a blunt. So the term that I've heard a lot growing up is if you don't see somebody roll it, don't smoke it.
Yeah, I've heard
but when I was in college, I had a friend who actually had a psychotic break from smoking marijuana. She never smoked before she got to college. She was maybe 19, and she started smoking, and she started smoking a whole lot in a short period of time. And she had a psychotic break and had to be hospitalized, and she hasn't been the same since. Like, she never recovered from that psychotic mm-hmm. break. So I'm very...
How did that affect you?
So it threw all of us off. It was kind of like, what happened to her? Like, can that happen to... Like, we're just like, we didn't understand it, right?
Hold your thoughts. Because I got to interrupt you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour I'm talking with 5 dynamic students, all FAMU students, all psychology folks. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you and continue to talk about marijuana. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This hour we're talking about marijuana. I had to interrupt you, Camille, so you continue.
So I had a friend in college who had a psychotic break from smoking marijuana. And the impact that it had on, I think, my group of friends, it was just confusion. We didn't understand what happened to her, and we chalked it up to that's just something that she is going through. Mm-hmm. So 10 years later, I'm in graduate school, and I've continued like that kind of posed a question in my head, is how does marijuana contribute to psychotic breaks, right? So my thesis that I just defended was on the Does substance use, and particularly cannabis, lead to risk for psychosis in African Americans? And we found that there's a correlation. If you have a genetic predisposition to have psychosis, so if you have a mom who had mm-hmm. you know, schizophrenia, or a dad, or an uncle, or a grandma, and then you consume cannabis, you're at a higher risk of having that psychotic break. So I think the ignorance that people have in using drugs is they don't know their family history. So you don't know what somebody else in your family dealt with, and what your genetics and what your DNA looks like, and then how smoking can affect that. So in being a responsible smoker, you know, if you're going to smoke, at least know the risk factors that could come from smoking, and then know what's been in your family, having that opportunity to go back.
Good point.
And to kind of piggyback off Camille, you know, not to generalize, but usually people
usually react based on if something has happened to them. So if, you know, and the piggyback off Ari, when he talked about the blind faith, usually the people who's operating off that blind faith probably never ran into an issue smoking marijuana. So they're just, you know, they're continuing to go through the flow, continuing to go through life. Oh, well, it didn't happen to me. So
it's cool.
Yeah, I'm cool. So, you know, so it's like, it's basically, you know, something, I guess, traumatic. I don't want to say traumatic, or something in the past. It's usually something that happened before, I think, that leads to then people becoming, you know, having reservations about smoking or what's in this or who did I get it from and stuff like that. So I definitely agree with Camille.
Okay. All right. That's good. Any other comments?
I would say just advise people out there to be mindful of what you're putting in your body. Just be aware of what you're ingesting, because I remember as a child seeing a young man in the neighborhood. He was a local young man, and he was walking across the bridge, and he didn't look quite like himself. I remember we passed by him, and I was in my mom's back seat. Later on, we found out he fell off the bridge and died.
What?
He had been smoking with some friends, and they put PCP in his joint. So he was not himself. He wasn't in his own level of consciousness, nothing like that, all because there was, like, no kind of checkup on that. So just, like, I do understand, like, because I do believe in that communal aspect of blind faith, and that is that social piece that I talked about, where you have that sense of connectedness. But it also be very cautious, because you can't pinpoint what's
And that's just what I was tapping into. That's what I was talking about. You know, this, that it's laced with so many other things that you, though he was with his friends. You know, he was with his friends. So, is marijuana a rite of passage now? Or smoking it? Of course, I guess you can do several things with marijuana. I need to say that. You can smoke it, you can eat it, you can vape it, and you can drink it. Okay, have as far as tea. What is the most popular way?
Probably smoking and vaping. Yeah. Well, edibles is really coming along.
Yeah, I have a big problem.
Yeah.
See, edibles are kind of squeamish, too, because the problem with edibles is it's not measured. You don't know how much. And so and it takes such a long time for your body to respond to it. So people go, oh, I'll have another one. And I'll have another one. And I have. And then they find that they have, you know, I guess they say you can't OD on marijuana. I read that you cannot OD on it. Nobody has ever died from an overdose of marijuana.
That's correct. It takes 15,000 pounds or something like that. I did a research on it.
Yeah. Okay.
You're not going to die.
You're not going to die.
Honestly, I think that's what plays into why it's so normalized. Yeah. Because it's like, what's the worst that can happen? You know? Like, I can't die. I can't overdose as other illicit drugs. So this must be okay.
Yeah, but you can't die. But there's a lot that could happen to you.
Yeah.
If, you know, you have a bad reaction to some ganja. And I feel like, you know, the psychotic breaks, the, like, people who smoke for a long time and then stop, a lot of times they have issues with digestion, they have issues eating, with their appetite. Like, they have, you know, it's a true drug, because there's withdrawals to it, you know?
Why are we saying it's a drug? I feel like the reason
it's
why, like Khalees was talking about, why part of that social freeness or carefreeness to be able to engage is, I don't know if anybody else at 2 or 3 in the morning hears these commercials. Oh yeah, they take this drug with symptoms of diarrhea, indigestion, kill yourself, like heart attack. Like, you'd be like, okay, I could do this to where at least I can see the side effects, or I know whether they're immediate. And then even though, like you said, the long-term ramifications we may not be considering in its totality, but as far as we can definitely, definitively know, okay, you said I'm trying to cure my cold and I might end up with a lost foot. I think this is, clearly I have better options. Right. So as far as, it really just speaks to where the whole medical or health industry really is, as far as the fact that you have in such a high prevalence that if these opioids and all these other things we were given were really effective as far as helping people, reducing pain, making sure that you're actually treating the symptoms that are causing people a lot of issues, then we wouldn't have such a large amount of people if communities flocking towards this as an available option or an alternative. So it really shows us where the deficit is and where marijuana seems to have filled the need that medicine initially wasn't.
So just out of curiosity, do you think one of the reasons it's been legalized is because communities such as our own, the Black community, already use it so much, so by legalizing it, they can actually get a profit from it?
Oh, of course. Look, kind of like with prohibition with alcohol. Until the American government can find a way to make money off of it, it's not something that's viewed as something that's to be socially pushed and encouraged. But as far as everyone's now starting to wonder, and even like you said, with it being a Schedule I drug,
how all of a sudden
can people be wanting to push this as medical benefits? Because there's a control system of, oh, how we can grow it, all right, how we can tax off of it. Like, I don't know how many people have been into a dispensary, but there's a significant price difference between getting something off the street versus in the dispensary. And I'll tell you, the dispensary is more expensive if you haven't looked. Mm-hmm. So as far as understanding like the financial implications and what that means as far as bringing money into a state or a local community or even necessarily an entire governmental system, it definitely, like you said, it has a lot to do with we can actually now profit off of it. So let's see what it can do.
Yeah. Pharmaceutical companies seeing all the money that's being made from the streets, in a sense, and you know they want to put their hat in it. They, want some of it.
Jay? Right. Who's they, Jay?
That's another topic, but you know they see all that money being made on the street, and they want a part of that. These companies want a part of it. These medical companies, these pharmaceutical companies, They want a part of it, and they know they can get their hands on it and make it times 10 and, you know, oversaturate and bring in more money than what the people on the street can control because they have more resources, more everything. So
share with us what's happening in Quincy.
Speak on it.
What a start. So basically, a lot of the companies, I think they're mainly Trulieve in Quincy. They're buying acres of land, tens and hundreds of acres of land, and building their plants to send. I think because it's not legalized recreationally, it's legalized medicinally in Florida. So they're taking from the plants. They're growing the plants in Quincy and extracting the oils and sending them to the shops over here. But basically, they're buying all the land. They're infiltrating the neighborhoods and building these infrastructure, these plants, these farms, using the land. And for instance, my neighborhood is a huge acre plant that they're using in my neighborhood. And I think the problem I have with it is that I don't think the community is seeing anything from what's being made or what's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's even as simple as infrastructure. I knocked my car in alignment from the streets, and I think that because they're coming in this neighborhood and they're buying this land, this is community land. This is people own these land. They're coming to communities and trying to buy this land. I had people from Trulieve come into my mom trying to buy a lot of her land for the plant and stuff. So they're just coming in neighborhoods and getting this land, and the community not seeing anything from it.
Here, while Jayla's making it sound nice and like they just coming in and, oh, buying what's available. No, they pushing some of these people out their houses. Like, they using housing codes and everything else to be able to make sure that you are feeling pressured to necessarily give up what it is that you have or what your family has generationally worked for and earned.
So taking land.
Exactly.
Right?
It's not just as sweet as it sounds.
Who's working that land? Who's working, like, who are they hiring out in Quincy?
The people of the community, so...
But they're paying a minimal, right?
Yeah, right, of course. But, you know, of course they're offering...
What are they offering?
I know people who work, they said they're making like 15 an hour. So, that's higher than minimum wage. So, when people hear that, you know, they're running to that because that's making more than what they were making at their previous job. So, people of the community working there. A lot of people that come from the community.
Let me make the distinction that there really isn't a distinction between recreational marijuana and medical marijuana.
Amen.
The key has to do with the active ingredient of THC. And it's the psychotropic mind-altering element that's there. It's prescribed for, you ought to help me. Cancer patients, Alzheimer's, glaucoma, although, you know, we could go on and on and on. Although, as far as the FDA is concerned, it's only okayed it only for two severe types of epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And everything else is, you just...
It's up in the air.
It's up in the air. It is up in the air. And I wonder, what's your position? And I'm sure I know what it is as far as the legalization or the decriminalization of marijuana, particularly when you look at marijuana and you look at hemp. Okay? Mm-hmm. They both are the same thing. The difference is the THC level. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you can't determine that by just looking at the plant. Mm-hmm. So when they come, when the feds come, and they see you, you say you're growing hemp, it all looks the same.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that they can just determine that right there on the spot. What's going to happen? And I'm just throwing these thoughts out there and want to hear you respond to them.
I hate to ask the seem to be the obvious question, but what ethnicity or color happens to be the person getting rolled up on? Because I'm in full disclosure, but I know homeboys both on both sides of the color spectrum who they've had different experiences when their attempts to grow, the attempts to sell, distribute, whatever it may be. But as far as understanding that there are some different reactions that you'll necessarily probably get depending on who that grower is and what they look like and what infrastructure or institutional backing that they have. So in a lot of instances, like you said, we won't know. And for those who necessarily may not look like us, I'm sure a lot of them are getting turned a blind eye. Just as long as you're necessarily not rocking the boat, that's what seems to be okay.
Okay. Everybody else feel that same way? You think it's okay?
So I think less than 3% of the cannabis industry is African American.
Yeah.
And African Americans historically are usually shut out of institutions that can bring wealth. It was like that with prohibition of alcohol, and it's like that with cannabis. And I think a large portion of that speaks to your point that, you know, it's illegal federally. And I think African Americans, Hispanic Americans have had bad experiences in dealing with illegal substances in the government. So we're even hesitant to get into this billion-dollar industry. But oftentimes it's these communities that have been plagued by the war on drugs that have lost umpteenth amount of individuals either to death or to prison that have these dispensaries coming in, such as East Oakland. And, you know, you got people coming in making a lot of money off of these communities that have lost individuals because of marijuana.
It's always about money.
It's, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is always about money.
So that, the lobby money talks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like we were saying. Yes, money is the key there. Okay. But when you couple money, combine it with people of color, as you mentioned, Camille, that's where the problem starts, okay? You know, people of color are going to get the short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the reality.
Right.
Okay.
So even in them legalizing it, it's just like there's still a stigma behind the usage. There's still, you know, the notion of it not being decriminalized. So we still run into problems no matter which way they flip the coin. So,
mm-hmm. And I hate to keep saying this, but it is real. It ain't really legalized.
Oh, well, yeah.
That, I mean, we talk about, oh, we have this freedom. Yeah. It's we have this freedom. You know, you can go to California. You can go to Massachusetts. You can go wherever. But the bottom line is you still are breaking the law, the federal law. Now, they choose, as you mentioned, to look the other way for some folks.
Right.
Yep, sound like a trap to me.
Yeah,
hey.
You know what I said when we were out there?
And that's why it's so detrimental to our communities is this ignorance. And I don't want to call it ignorance, but just turning the blind eye to knowing that it's illegal, but not really accepting that it's illegal or talking about it in legal terms, because the common language that we use is, oh, it's legalized in this state, it's legalized in that state, but we keep the idea that it's illegal, like, in the back of our heads, and we don't really acknowledge that, and it's extremely detrimental and dangerous Mm-hmm. Especially to the teenagers and young adults who are selling and using it without a real understanding of the law.
Mm-hmm. You raise an excellent point. That is the big concern. That, yeah, you know, Tallahassee was going through this, whether they were going to have this ordinance and it was going to be legal. And who is the county? I can't think of his name right now. But anyhow, he said, I'm following the federal law. Mm-hmm. Mm. And according to the federal law, it's still illegal. So, what message does that send? What does that say?
Well, for one, it tells us, for anyone who had any question to the power of local politics, mm-hmm. whether it be in your area, mm-hmm. as we clearly see, if your state or oftentimes California has been a major push and driver mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for a lot of the social change and activist movements that we've seen. So as far as understanding that being involved and trying to control the narrative of those local politics can have a national impact, because there's been plenty of times where California has passed something to where the rest of the country is now figuring out, all right, how do we necessarily come to grips or deal with this? Even like with the NCAA about kids right. being able to make money off their likeness. Just read a story today. Now the NCAA's got to put right. something in there for the rest of the states.
Of course, now so, we got Trump. And you know how Trump feels about California. I mean, come on, let's be real. Let's be real. We all know well how he feels. I mean, you know, you have to put it out there because mm-hmm. that is the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And we tend to pass that over too. But that is a real component. We're going to take a break. To my listening audience, you tuned in to 411 Teen. And we are talking about marijuana, medical and recreational. We'll see you shortly.
Mae. Mae!
What do you want?
Bring me some reapers. Faster. Faster! Way faster. Faster. Sleep faster.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're coming back off our break, and you're in the hot seat, Ari. What were you going to say? Share it with us. I think we need to hear about this and talk about it.
Yes, ma'am. So one of the interesting things that in our preparation for this show is we started to realize something as far as or about if the promotion of medical marijuana in comparison to getting it from street forms or street sources, mm-hmm. if that's necessarily being used as a method to redirect funds and financial opportunities away from disenfranchised communities, which have traditionally relied or have needed to rely on illegal activities or drug dealing in a sense to go about compensating for the economic disenfranchisement that mm-hmm. they feel on a societal level. And understanding that while that's not something we want to encourage and promote within our community as being a consistent behavior, we understand that due to the reality of the American social structure, that a lot of times these are the easiest and most readily available options besides being an entertainer, football player, just yeah. really those two. Mm-hmm. So understanding what this new form of legalization of this Schedule I drug is supposedly how we're even having this conversation. I wanted to open it up for anybody else. Do we feel like this is going to be something that's ultimately helpful in the long term, understanding that if we right now surmise that a good portion of the reason why we do the things that we do is because of lack of economic resources and availability, if we take out another mechanism or essentially a staple of economic power and influence through the use and the selling of drugs to either our community or outside communities, mm-hmm. does that necessarily mean that we're encouraging a certain population of our people to thus need to find other methods to secure their financial needs, whether it be through engaging in other illicit activities mm-hmm. or necessarily having to take from somebody else to gain what you have necessarily lost?
Let me just throw this in and then I want you all to respond. Of course, as far as the acquisition, mm-hmm. it's still cheaper, you know, to do it, and you brought that up earlier, mm-hmm. but I just wanted people to understand it's still cheaper to do it
illegally.
Illegally. Mm-hmm. Than to go to the dispensary.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, now, yeah. Respond.
I think there's always going to be a black market, especially with the prices and the dispensaries like you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still a black market for mm-hmm. for alcohol. You know, mm-hmm. you know, in Quincy, you get some moonshine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, I don't think the black market is going anywhere. I don't think drugs in our community is going anywhere.
Mm.
If anything, this is going to encourage the use of illegal drugs because the price difference between the illegal and the legal and who has access to those legal drugs. A lot of the times, it's not us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not the ones with the marijuana cards.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the ones in the dispensaries buying fruity apple sour gummy O's,
pumpkin spice.
I don't think. That's that. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to hear all of you respond to that.
Well, I think it's all about ownership. If you don't necessarily own it, how much control do you have of it? Whether that's selling, whether that's ingest, whether that's anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're going through something that's owned by organizations and companies that aren't for your benefit or aren't for you, your beneficial economically or from a health standpoint, why are you indulging in it? Why are you cooperating? Why are you accepting it? You know, so I think it's all about ownership until, you know, people from our community or people of color own more into these industries, and maybe we can talk about the benefits of it economically or what we can do with it from a medicinal standpoint.
I agree with my peers. I feel like this issue is multi-layered.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke about, like, the opioid epidemic earlier and things like that, and marginalized minorities trying to acquire adequate health care and things like that. If you're actually going to the doctor, you're trying to seek these things, it's very unlikely, or we're historically faced with issues when we're trying to receive this medical services that we're looking for. So what has been an easier stronghold for us has been this recreational and within our communities, finding a communal person to go to and things like that. So that person has become your holistic doctor for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the issue of, like, equity in the black community. So it's like, we have this history of it being criminalized and so many people who are in jail right now to these days, even in these states where it's been legalized, and they're still there to this day. And then what does it mean for the ramifications, like you said, of the people who were sellers or things and may have a felony conviction or things like that, who still can't acquire other type of businesses and things like that. So I feel like it's multifaceted, and I personally, all in all, don't think it's healthy for our community.
I definitely agree with everyone was saying, especially about it being, you know, there still being a black market, because, like you said, understanding the price differences in the dispensary versus on the street, like, anyone can look at that and just be like, okay, yeah, I'm not messing with that, because for one, again, not knowing what goes into it, for two, supporting your local street pharmacist because of how that has impacted the community in a way that you may have seen beneficial. So, like what you said in terms of the holistic doctor, things of that nature, and just generally understanding that even if we were, to Jalen's point, even if we were to, you know, seek out ownership, it's like that would be torn down in some aspect because of how they're capitalizing and taxing on this anyway. So I feel like maybe it won't be the best idea to try to infiltrate in I'm trying to find the best way to say it. And we just need to take over in our own way. So owning it the best way we know how as a people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to add, like, to mirror your point, you know, we naturally or historically have had, like, this mistrust of the medical profession or this mistrust of doctors.
So.
And rightfully so.
Rightfully so.
So with these dispensaries coming in, that mistrust is going to lead us right back to our local street pharmacist or local natural healer in our community and away from these institutions, which, because I also feel like it's detrimental to the black community, may in the end be a good thing. Like, we don't need to be going to these businesses to buy marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to question why they're in our neighborhoods trying to sell it to us in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
What benefit are they getting selling it to us? You know, so I think raising those questions is going to be important, but I wholeheartedly agree with your comment.
And even to piggyback off what you said, just like, thinking about where they're putting in these dispensaries, just like where they put the liquor stores, where they put the tobacco shops, mm-hmm. things like that. Uh-huh. Where are they going? Uh-huh. Versus, like you see, they're moving to communities, mm-hmm. taking over communities that you don't even see to grow these things, mm-hmm. and then they're moving the dispensaries actually into your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
mm-hmm. see, here's where we didn't talk about where we from, but I'm from Detroit, Michigan, so yes. It's already legalized up there.
I remember. Yes, homeboy.
Yes, ma'am. So it's like, I think it's interesting that we feel like, despite the fact these dispensaries being here, that people are going to run towards these other sources. I don't believe that's the case. Like, right now in Detroit, right now, there's a dispensary on every other block. And I kid you not. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, mm-hmm. considering what we know about Detroit and Michigan, like, I guarantee you it ain't a bunch of the others going in there and making sure that it's financially keep going and it's financially thriving. So, understanding in the same way how we talk about, we know that these liquor stores and the tobacco shops are in our community and we're clearly going to them, dispensaries are going to be the next thing. Right. It's just, especially since we're talking about, oh, this new thing about we're going to raise the minimum wage across all sectors. What? That just means more discretionary income or perceived discretionary income to thus go about investing in these recreational or medicinal activities. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're talking about is the black market. We may end up be pricing ourselves out of it, essentially, mm-hmm. to a certain point. Because there's a point to where, and smokers say this all the time, quality over quantity. So what? We understand that what? People would rather participate in something that they know is that they know is effective instead of wasting money on something that they necessarily know isn't. Mm-hmm. So, and even that even speaks to preference. We know how preferential people can be in what choosing what cars they drive, what they choose mm-hmm. to drink. What makes it about what you smoke?
They drink.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like if you could be particular about a liquor, you could be particular about, oh, I only smoke this strand. I only mm-hmm. smoke from here. Mm-hmm. I only smoke mm-hmm. this type or this quality, this mm-hmm. level of THC, mm-hmm. X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. So understanding that the legal quality always has a better chance of getting stepped on and may not have as high a potency as what you're able to legally get mm-hmm. from a dispensary. Right. That's why I don't know if we're accurately assessing what these true impacts of the dispensary are going to be, especially what we can combine that with the federal and legislative literature and protocol that we're seeing is trying to be enacted. So mm-hmm. there's a reason why they're trying to make economic opportunities available through your job, which, again, we all know can be the general cause of stress. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm going to pay you more to do the same thing, but I'm going to give you something else right. that you can spend this money on mm-hmm. and, again, be able to come back to work and put it all together again.
And the more we talk about this and unpack this,
go ahead.
It's like, what, you know, how they're doing these dispensaries and these companies, what they're essentially doing is what, you know, our brothers and sisters on the street are doing. Mm-hmm. They're yep. buying and flipping. for lack of a better term. You know what I'm saying?
Like, that's what it is.
Like,
they're a drug company too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like we can't tell the difference between recreational or medicinal weed, but they're getting the same weed that
that's
someone
right.
on our street pharmacists are getting and selling at higher prices. So buying and flipping, you know, they're getting and flipping the price. So when you think about it like that, so
Let me read this. I knew I had written it someplace. I wanted you to know the difference in the schedules.
Okay.
Schedule 1, drug, marijuana, heroin, ecstasy, peyote. Schedule 2 is Demerol and Ritalin and codeine and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Schedule 3 is anabolic steroids, Tylenol with codeine. Schedule 4, Xanax, Valium, Ativan, and then Schedule 5 is Robitussin AC. It is the way to approach this, to try to change the FDA scheduling. Now, if you're in one, that means that you have absolutely no medical value. And see, that's contradictory right now, because we're still saying that it has medical value, mm-hmm. even if we're just giving it to those who have epilepsy. But they're saying that if you're Schedule 1, you have no medical value, and you are a substance that is being abused. Nothing but abuse.
Yeah, I think that would be the start to get the laws changed, mm-hmm. is to change the FDA classification. Mm-hmm. I also think there's a lot of politics involved in that. From doing my research, I've done research that has shown that there's a specific strand in the marijuana plant that can be made synthetically and then put into a pill form, and it's more effective than the actual plants. And so you have these pharmaceutical companies putting out research that shows that the actual plant is ineffective, but a synthetic version of the plant is more effective. So there's a lot of research and money and politics involved in that, but I definitely think that would be the first step to changing the laws.
Considering how like the FDA and other drug agencies to be intertwined with the bureaucracy of the government, I don't necessarily, like, while it would be a great start, I don't see how we realistically do that, especially understanding, like, stuff like Adderall, that people take, is literally a molecule difference from some of the Schedule I drugs. Okay. So it's like, if you're talking about literally molecule compounds and chemical compounds being one difference, and then, oh, you technically over here. So I don't necessarily see that as being something that will ultimately change the overall societal perception. It may change what, at the bureaucracy level, what they're willing to do because it has better optics. But as far as considering the fact that the social aspect of it has grown to such a large degree, we've seen, like, even right now, the government can't slow down the progress of what's going on with marijuana. So it's like, because of our own social power and social belief about this effectiveness, regardless about what we're seeing, well, what they said it has no medical benefit, like, we're continuing to push this as being something we have to have this. I think it's even on the bill for this for coming up elections.
I was going to tell you, here in Florida, there are three different petitions for drives for recreational marijuana that most likely will be on the 2020 ballot. Mm-hmm. Okay, and a new poll at the University of Florida found that 64%. Of the Florida voters from both sides of the political tables are in agreement. When you look at Democrats, it's 73%. When you look at Republicans, it's 54%, I think. And independents were 64%. I mean, I think that says something. I think that that really is very clearly making a statement. You need 60% of the voters to pass it.
Crazy, ain't it?
I mean, like, just some support from that, from the World Health Organization, they report that 54% of people are okay with recreational and medical marijuana use, and 81% are okay with it if it's for medical benefits and things like that. Just because I kind of reached across the aisle, I was originally in pharmacy and I came over to psychology, looking at some of those drugs that we named, just like you said, being a step away and things like that, those drugs and the side effects and the things that they produce in grand scheme of comparing them to marijuana aren't the same.
Just that was the point blank.
But
comparison.
But number two is like how Mr. Christian brought up the government trying to slow that down. That you said the FDA said this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the FDA is the one who has to approve.
Right,
like, and change
FDA,
it.
So they, the schedule.
While it seems like, you know, they have no stronghold, no weight in the situation, they clearly do, because that is still being classified as a Schedule I drug, ties into why those people are still incarcerated.
Exactly.
Like, it gives them validation for the way that everything else is playing out, and yet we're trying to just like, amnesia of the pockets, we're gonna call it. now that they seem to have forgotten about all these negative ramifications and things as soon as it can be monetized and they can gain from it.
And we're just about out of time, but you know, the other thing that we really didn't talk about is legalization, decriminalization, and the use of young kids, 12, 13, 14, and that is a problem that they have at least identified, particularly with those edibles. You know, we kind of touched on that. That's a problem that it exists, okay? So how do we address that? Because they're finding that more and more young kids are definitely using marijuana. So it's not just among the legal
I see. I don't know how you all, but that is the problem.
That's scary.
That is scary.
It is, but considering who we know is invested in medical marijuana or marijuana in general, it really shouldn't be. So I don't know if anyone's looked, but the largest three tobacco companies have invested in marijuana, meaning that in the same way that you see those promotions at gas stations and other places around your school, it's going to be like that soon for marijuana. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We are out of time. I got to have y'all come back. Thanks so much. Be sure to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.